This is Frieda Worden at CJSF. Connie Fogel is the leader of the Canadian Action Party in this federal election.
Our primary platform right now is we're fighting for the survival of Canada, to protect the survival of Canada. Our second platform is that once we restore our own sovereignty in that survival, then we want to restore the sovereignty and power that's in our own Bank of Canada so that we can control our destiny, because whoever is in control of the creation and issuance of your money supply controls everything. So those are the two fundamental things. And the third fundamental prong is a deep need for massive electoral reform. But first and foremost, if we don't manage to retain Canada as an entity, it's all academic, because we'll be into another total regime structure. In March of 2005, Prime Minister Morrison, Prime Minister of Canada, President Bush from the United States, and President Fox from Mexico entered an agreement called the Security and Prosperity Partnership Agreement, which mirrors the language of an agenda, a written agenda of the most senior, most influential corporate entities in North America. That agenda is to move even more forcefully all power and control over into the corporate agenda under their domain and dominance, and the national entities representing the people basically will just be rubber stamping what the corporate elite want. And that is a reality. Nobody's talking about that but us. If we don't come to grips with that issue, all the things we want to do about control of our money is down the tube. Anything we want to do about electoral reform is down the tube. Anything anybody talks about doing for the benefit of people, whether it's retaining Medicare, hospitalization, dealing with education, infrastructure, everything is down the tube, because the sovereignty of the people will be gone. What we've all been, those of us who have been fighting the globalization, corporatization process, you know, for many, many, many years, have known that the various agreements that they were calling as forms of trade agreements, which of course were not trade, they were only about investment in truth, have been dealing with the economic side and totally removing, you know, the power of the people over their economic arrangements. And in North America, we have the free trade agreement and the NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, with amongst the three countries here. Now, that was the economic deliverance over to the corporate elite. What this new arrangement does, the Security and Prosperity Partnership Agreement, is it expands on NAFTA and moves into other domains of the military, of policing, of the judicial legal structure, integrating all of that into a North American regional arrangement, the Security and Prosperity Partnership Agreement, directed by the corporate elite, means dramatic changes in the three countries of Canada, the United States, and Mexico internally, so that everything is being harmonized and put together. And of course, it will be directed. The United States is the vehicle to deliver the demands of the corporate elite. Start with the Patriot Act in the United States, Homeland Security Act, and then move over to Canada. We've got an act called the Anti-Terrorism Act, and then we've got the Security Act. Our Anti-Terrorism Act models the Patriot Act. It doesn't go quite as far yet. Our Security Act is trying to sort of copy some things about Homeland Security. It doesn't go anywhere near as far. But what we're seeing there is the intermingling, the integration of the legal policing aspect. We've got the military integration. That's and of course, let me back a bit. This legal apparatus began, of course, after 9/11, and there's been a lot of, you know, people who are paying attention to all of this kind of information. There's been a lot of criticism about what really happened at 9/11, and of course, since 9/11, that these dramatic changes in the legal structure have taken place. Which legal changes strip us of our sovereign entitlements to protections of our civil liberties? In the United States, it's dramatic. In Canada, it's dramatic. I honestly don't know how far developed the Mexicans are in their stripping. But countries around the world are doing this kind of stripping. And, I mean, we're focusing on North America. So we've got that in the legal parameter. In the military parameter, since 9/11, There's been this intermingling of the coordinating effort and integration of the military arrangements in North America, so that there's the Bilateral Planning Committee, which is a group of military people from the United States under the domination of the United States, and including leading military people from Canada, working together basically to develop a military regime in North America. And this is actually happening under the NORTHCOM arrangement, which was a development beyond NORAD. Canada has in principle committed itself to Fortress America. And nobody's talking about that. But it's happening. I mean, I've taken the time to begin to look at some of the actual arrangements that do exist. You can find the information on the website. You've just got to go look for it. Michelle Chosadovsky, a Canadian economist who has been an anti-corporate person writing on what's going on internationally at all levels, and has been focusing not only on the economic but on the military side. And his website, globalresearch.ca, I think, documents so much of this kind of thing, so that this is the real apparatus. Now, a lot of us have known in bits and pieces that these things are happening. Nobody's tied it all together the way I have right now, and is presenting it to the public as an agenda, as a specific, clear agenda. We've got leading non-governmental organizations speaking about these things, but they speak about it separately. They're not looking at it in the cohesive political way that we are. It's dramatically profound in change for all of us human beings, us citizens in North America, in our respective countries. We're losing our sovereignty. It's not the U.S. as such imposing it on Canada. It's this change being imposed on all of us in the three nations by a force, very powerful corporate entities who we've known about their power for years. They've always been around, and it's just that right now our governments are submitting to them completely, and the structure is being put in place.
Connie Fogel is the leader of the Canadian Action Party and running in this federal election.
Okay.
Our second platform is that we want to restore the sovereignty and power that's in our own Bank of Canada. In Canada, we are a very fortunate country. Many countries have a central bank, and a number of countries had a central bank that had the constitutional power within itself, arising out of the country's own constitution, to be the entity in charge of creating and issuing the money supply. This whole business about money, who owns it, who creates it, how it's done, is a secret that's been withheld from the people forever. We've had leading political people, leading academics over time make statements, including Lincoln, including Kennedy, including Mackenzie King in Canada, including major bankers like the Rothschilds, who have made statements to the effect that whoever is in control of the creation and issuance of money is the person in power, and they don't care who politically is in power, because those political entities really are useless without that power. And we in Canada are very lucky, because we have such a central bank that belongs to the people. The government of Canada is a sole shareholder, and under an act called the Bank of Canada Act, the total power is there for that central bank to be the creator and issuance of money instead of the private banking system. The United States have a central bank, but it's a private bank. It's, even though it's called the Federal Reserve, it doesn't belong to the people like our bank belongs to the people. The difference in Canada is, for about 40 years, our Bank of Canada was used to be the entity to put the money into the system instead of the private banks, for only about 25% of the money. The important point is this. When private banks are the ones that we go to get the money, they charge us a lot of interest. If you have your central bank that has the authority, that central bank can create the money the same way the private bank does, and not charge any interest at all, or if it does, just a little wee bit. And whatever interest they do charge comes back into their general coffers, which is the power in Canada. It's a great big significant issue, and it's the simple premise is this. If you as a homeowner have a chance to get a mortgage for your house at 7% from one institution, and you can get it from a different institution for 0% or 1%, which one are you going to go to? That's the fundamental principle. Now, there are a lot of other mechanisms about the control of the banks, like statutory reserves and so on, that flow from the power of the Bank of Canada as well. That's another, I don't want to get into that right now. The point is, we still have that power in Canada, and we used it. Canada used it for about 40 years, just before the Second World War, really used it a lot, and then right through the Second World War and for a number of years after that. Never in full capacity. The private banks always functioned, and we're not saying private banks will stop functioning. Some people would like to see them stop functioning and have the Bank of Canada use it for everything. But we're saying at least let's go back to what we did in the 70s when we were up to a 25% rate. At that period of time in Canada, that's when we had, when our country was the most rich, when the infrastructure was built right after the Second World War, bridges, highways, homes, programs were created, social programs, medical care, hospitalization, all these kinds of things that really matter for people. Then in the late 70s, political will came about, beckoning, bowing to the pressure of the financial institutions, who are one of these major corporate elite groups ruling. And they've cut back more and more and more in the use of the Bank of Canada, so that now we're only down to about 3%. I mean, the Bank of Canada is used to issue the actual paper money and the coins and a few things, government bonds for a minimal amount, up to only about 3 to 5%. So there are a lot of people trying to deal with the control over the creation of the money. It's not new. People have known about this, but the biggest disaster for the citizen is the way the information about that power has been withheld and ignored and hidden, so that we don't have the power to control the money.
Connie, this is very interesting. I talked to Ron Gray from the Christian Heritage Party yesterday, and he is also talking about the need to use the central bank to issue low or no interest loans for infrastructure.
Yes. Ron Gray, I know him personally, and he's been on side on this issue with the Canadian Action Party for many years. Many politicians do know about the bank. I mean, it's an entity that exists. It's got a physical building right in Ottawa, right opposite the Parliament buildings. And there are members who are members of Parliament who know about it within all the parties. It's just that the ones that are elected refuse to demand the use of it. But there we get to the importance of the smaller parties, because we're a voice out here who's saying, look, you guys, why aren't you dealing with this? And so we're getting the information out. The guys that are there are not telling the people about it. So we on the outside are, and we are the opposition.
So the electoral reform issue.
Right.
Are we in some jeopardy? I thought we had a lovely system here for voting. Everyone has praised it in the past.
Oh, God, no. Absolutely not. No, most people are not happy. The very fact that we had I think it was a 60% voter turnout last time, and it's predicting a much lower voter turnout this time, speaks to the attitude of the citizenry that they're not happy with what they get, that the way our system works doesn't provide for their needs, and whoever gets in doesn't respect their interest anyway. So we've got a first-past-the-post system, which ends up many times with a majority in power who, in fact, is a minority in terms of the wishes of the people out there. So we need to have a form of we need to change that so there's a representation that's more honest in reflecting the way the people in the country vote. So you need some form of proportional representation. And there are many varieties of that, but that would, a form of proportional representation is more likely to, well, will ensure a better reflection of the actual attitude of voters out there. It will be reflect the numbers of where the votes are going more honestly. But just proportional representation isn't enough. A big problem we have in Canada, and it happens in other parts of the world too, it's everywhere, and we see it at the various levels of government, from the federal to the provincial to the municipal, is that it's the bureaucrats, it's the officials who basically have way too much power, because they're there forever, and the elected people come and go, and the elected people too often just rely on what the officials tell them is the right thing to do. As, for example, in the signing of the FTA and the NAFTA, the bureaucrats put the stuff on the plate to the guys and said, this is what it means, and the elected people didn't read it. They didn't know what they were signing. So the bureaucrats in fact, they're the guys that wheel and deal with the representatives from industry and are the ones that are committing us to these kinds of arrangements. Then they take them back to the political people, and the political people rubber stamp them. We've got people at a municipal level who just elected here in Vancouver. Some of them take the position, well, they have to wait to see what the officials tell them to do before they'll know how to vote. It's bizarre. You know, we elect people to be representing us based on what we want, not what some official tells them is the right thing to do. So that really has to change. So it's more than just a representation vote for getting, propelling somebody into government. It's also directly and specifically getting at the way the system works, whereby the bureaucracy is permitted to tell the parliamentarians what to do. It's major, dramatic reform that we need.
What particular reform are you advocating? Are you supporting the BC transferable vote type thing?
That's a form of representation. That's one kind of a form. I don't have a particular favorite that I can say is going to probably deliver the best. I do know in terms of that proportional representation on its own is not enough. We have to go to a better direct democracy kind of arrangement. The kind of thing that they have in Switzerland is, as I understand it, a fairly good model of permitting the citizens to have more initiative, to recall parliamentarians, to play a more direct role by way of referenda, more often more referenda, so the decision-making is in their hands with regard to the arrangements that we're going to live under. We have to look at those arrangements that are working in the world, and we absolutely have to change that. And you know what? Until we do, we're going to have, I think what we're going to see in Canada is another minority election of government this time, and then after that another one, and that's all because we have a broken electoral system. The tragedy for the citizen is that while that broken mechanism is functioning, behind the scenes, the bureaucrats are working with the prime minister and with his leading cabinet people, and they're entering arrangements to create this regime change, put that into effect. Like, that process is happening. We're having significant changes happening at our border, at our total infrastructure with regard to customs, with regard to immigration, with regard to our income tax, with regard to revenue, with regard to privacy information, with regard to security, with regard to civil liberties. All of that mechanism is going on, is ongoing, and it's happening while we're twiddling our thumbs.
All right, Connie, that sounds like a very good final statement, but is there anything else that I failed to ask you here?
Well, just that citizens have a duty to inform themselves and to participate. We're very lucky to live in a place where we can have democracy if we choose. But the democracy doesn't come easily. It comes at a high price. That high price is eternal vigilance. And it means every citizen has to make an effort to protect it for ourselves and for each other and for our children. And it can be lost in a flick of a finger. So people need to arm themselves with information. Go to our website, CanadianActionParty.ca, and read the material that's there. I've documented all the things I'm talking about. Go to other websites, inform yourself. Unfortunately, you're not going to have candidates across the country from the Canadian Action Party. I'm asking you to vote for those candidates where you have them. If you don't have them, I'm asking citizens to go after their other favorite person and don't vote for anybody unless they're going to commit to the kinds of things I'm talking about. If they won't do it, then choose one of the minority parties as closest to us, as closest to these kinds of principles, and cast your vote there. It doesn't matter whether people vote for the Conservatives or the Liberals, they're the same. The difference between them is that Harper is more honest about what he's doing. Martin is doing the same thing, only he's lying about it. So when people say we can't have the Conservatives because this is what they're going to do to us, Martin is doing it to us already. He's the one signing these agreements. He's the one that's committed us on the National Planning Agreement on the military. He's the one that's gone on to the Security and Prosperity Initiative. It's horror time for us.
Whoa, thank you very much, Connie Fogel, who is the leader of the Canadian Action Party and running in this election, this federal election. And the only thing that I could click on the website was your two-minute talk in English and French, and there's a link missing somehow, or if it's not very clear. So you should get your website person to
fix that. Oh, you know
what?
Our website's been sabotaged twice in the course of this election.
Oh, my gosh.
We just keep getting knocked down. Somebody's attacking us, and we're at the stage where we're rebuilding. It's a nightmare, a daily nightmare. It's really something. We're obviously stepping on somebody's toes.